Hey, you're golden.
Go ahead. All right, we moved some stuff around.
Yes.
We've got, 2-year braces here, right?
Yep.
And these are the small mediums.
Correct.
But the difference between the large is just bigger size, right?
Yeah, just a little bigger for your neck. It's just wider. It actually uses all the same hardware. The only difference is the collar base. So
okay.
We're going to have those in here hopefully early June. So
I want to rip a Band-Aid off. Where are they made?
They are made, most of our stuff is made in China. Some of our shocks and tether stuff's made in Taiwan. The composites are really expensive. The especially with ours, we have a ton of CNC machining involved. I can tell you that we couldn't even get the hardware made for our brace for the price we get our whole brace made package here. And you know that unless some people want a $4,500 neck brace, if you want a $4,500 version, then we could make it here. But we went and we actually spent a month overseas setting up manufacturing. It wasn't a deal where we did everything from here. We went there, we were embedded in it. We did the same, you know, pains that Robbie Gordon's been dealing with on the
with his Speedy TV
stuff. Yeah, you know, and we got a lot of good faith by going over there, especially it was a really difficult time during when we went over. They were still in really strict lockdowns. It was almost impossible to get into the country. We spent almost 2 weeks just trying to get there. And we could write a book on that whole trip. But by doing it, we found an awesome manufacturer, great people to work with, incredibly good product. I know my dad built carbon fiber and reed valves for jet skis in the early 2000s at his machine shop, and they were mass producing those. So my dad had a background in composites, and he was so impressed with not only the products they were be able to put out, but a fairly small factory, how clean everything was. Carbon fiber can be super messy.
Does the factory have any certifications to it or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean...
like ISO or anything like that?
Yeah, they have ISO. They've got a wall that they are very proud of every different certification you could want. And I am not very good with all of the acronyms.
Well, there's also so many. The only one I know of is ISO, I think 9001, because of a place I was working at was working towards that certification.
Yep.
And I know it was a multi-year process and was multiple inspections. Everything had to be very precise and documented. So if it carries anything like that, it's got to be legit. And would you trust your life with it or your potential future kids? Life with one of your products and where it's made.
I wouldn't put my kid in anybody else's brace but ours, and I have an 11-year-old. So I definitely believe in the product. We went through a very possibly excessive QC procedure that we go through them, not only for the parts that are good, but also where the bad parts go and how those are destroyed and how those are marked to make sure that there's no possibility of a bad part ever reaching the real world.
Are there any of your parts that you have developed along the way that may have failed that you...
Oh yeah, there was a bunch of stuff. The going from a prototype where you're doing everything in-house or, you know, down the street, I come from my dad's fourth generation machinist, so we built a lot of stuff ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, putting all that on, you know, computer and having things made in different places. And when we were getting samples back and, you know, there was stuff that, oh, we need to make this tweak here, we need to adjust this. We were still doing a little bit of R&D even as we were ramping up for production, because we're the type of people that we want to make it better, better, better. So if you think you can make this tweak here, adjust it, you want to do it. Some of that didn't work. We had a really, really cool, in theory, clip system, had an anchor to the helmet that failed. And we were at a point where we had spent a bunch of money on tooling and injection molds and all kinds of different stuff to make this.
So you'd already spent money for the design that failed?
Yes. We had spent quite a bit of money on tooling, and we could have gone back and tried to play with different materials, but it was something that scared me. And if anything like that failed on or in real life, I couldn't do it.
Well, and I can only assume that's something you're not going to recover from. It like now as products being delivered, if that would have happened, something would have happened now or moving forward, that's a reputation as a new company you might not ever be able to come back from.
No, and you, especially when you're developing a product like this, you can't have a big ego. You can't get stuck in, well, this was my idea, so this is, you know, the, each little piece that you, oh, I'm going to run with this because that was what I came up with. If something fails or something isn't working right, something isn't gelling, throw it in the scrap heap and go do something, you know, go a different direction. So, like our anchor system was a complete redesign and rework, and it was now it's something we're really proud of, our anchor system. But there was a point in time, and it was when we had already started getting set up with our factory, and it wasn't anything that our factory did wrong. It was just we were trying to make a swing at something that was really cool, and it seemed great in theory, but in practice, it failed. And what we realized after it failed was that there was no safety net for it. If one piece component in this system didn't work, the whole thing, you know, you had a free-floating head, and we weren't willing to even like consider that. So we threw that in the dumpster and ate the tooling on it and went in a different direction. And
so redundancy is something that is a big part of endurance racing, whether it's like running down Baja Peninsula or King of the Hammers, and not so much in sprint car racing, but even NASCAR, they've got two sets of ignition systems.
Yep.
You know, those redundancies are very important, so that way if one thing fails, there's a backup. And yep, it sounds like you found that you needed a redundancy in that part, and you came up with a way to have I wouldn't say fail safe, because nothing is, we're all human, things are developed.
We chose to race cars. There's no such thing as perfection, yes, or 100% safety.
But you switched directions to a different clip system that is a little bit more redundant.
Yeah, it's a system. All the strength on our clip system comes from an M6 bolt that's very similar to what, you know, the industry standard is. And it the really only difference in ours is a magnetic retention system, and a lot of our competitors use a spring-loaded system. Ours is magnetic. You know, we're looking at, you know, what's the wave of the future? What's everybody doing? They're not making spring-loaded phone mounts. They're not making stuff like that. It's everything's going towards magnets, and they're light and super strong. And so we found a way to use a magnetic retention system, and now it's something that I think is one of our. We don't spend a lot of time on it because I think our shock absorber gets most of the spotlight, but I think our anchor system is pretty cool.
So let's go to the shock absorber, because a lot of the guys that watch this. The shock system in these vehicles that most of the people that watch this particular podcast, it's a big deal.
Are you telling me off-road guys use shocks?
And they're not a shock that's that big that can go on a dyno and move around a bunch. I mean, some of these shocks are as tall as us.
Yeah.
Particularly Phil Licardi, he has a bypass that's also a coilover that he's developed.
Yep.
And this thing goes from the back corner of the B-pillar, where the roof and the B-pillar is, down to a trailing arm. That's how long those things are. So your shock, does it use pressurized nitrogen as a spring with gas in a piston, like I'm thinking of a nitrogen shock, or can you expand on how it's actually dampening or slowing down the movement?
So it's fairly simple and complex all at the same time.
Of course.
It's a very super small little shock. I think it's only 140 millimeters long, so exact opposite of his shock.
Is there an inch measurement on that? Because most of us aren't Canadian.
You know, I think it's, you know.
Open it up!
Maybe 5 inches.
We're getting there!
You can't actually even see the shock with all the covers and everything we have on it, but it's got oil inside. My father had a background in suspension development on the motorcycle side, and specifically for Supercross, to be able to go through a set of Supercross hoops, the suspension needs to be extremely stiff to not bottom going through a set of hoops, but also soft enough to squat and settle in the corner so the bike will still turn. So what they developed was called Christmas tree valving, and okay, it's just a form of speed-sensitive valving that allows it to you know, at the super high speed impact, it gets really stiff, but at a, you know, lower impact, it moves fairly free. Ours is extremely aggressive on both, you know, it moves, you know, with your fingers at low speed, but in a 70 G impact, it barely, you know, it stiffens up so it doesn't even use the entire travel at 70 okay. Gs.
So your shock is actually, you know, taxing inspiration from Supercross and stuff like that.
Yep.
Well, do you mind if we actually look at it now?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
You get to open it.
So
I spent way too much time working on this packaging for me to open it up. You get to have the honors.
All right. So you can see everybody, got all the information on it. What do we got here? Some of your information about how it works and all that.
This is mostly, these are the terms that maybe the average person doesn't know.
Okay.
We talk a lot about in our marketing, whether it's high velocity impacts, which you probably know, versus like angular acceleration and low threshold energy, upper neck tension, and specifically one of the things we do really well is time to peak. Just moving, if you think about an impact, you can put 5 pounds of weight on your hand and it doesn't hurt. If you take a 5 pound weight, drop it on your hand, it's gonna hurt.
Okay.
So just moving, even if we didn't even lower the energy, just taking that energy and dispersing it over a wider amount of time is something we've done very well. So we try to, you know, on our packaging,
give
a little bit of education. However many people read it, who knows? But I'm also like I'm a packaging guy. I think, okay, especially for a $1,200 product, it shouldn't just be a
packaging, presentation, how it's shipped. It means a lot, right?
You know, I don't think it should just be like a simple box wrapped in
bubble wrap.
Yeah, bubble wrap, and that's what you get for $1,200. So we got a nice box.
I know I've seen some unboxing videos for RC cars, and the packaging, like, it looks and feels very nice. So I can only expect that, you know, for that price, it's what you get. All right, so here we go. Oh, so this is talking about your dampening system.
Yep, the IDS is our shock
that's
system.
That's the actual name.
Yeah, inertia dampening system.
Okay.
That's
nice. So you got that in there covered. And then I know from the videos I've watched of your stuff, it comes with a bag and a case. It's not a separate thing you have to buy, right?
Correct, yep. Every brace ships with the carrying case.
Is that industry standard?
No, absolutely that.
Okay.
I haven't opened it.
I don't own a neck brace, so I honestly don't know if they all come with a like padded case like this.
Nope. Most of them come wrapped in bubble wrap.
Okay. All right.
I haven't purchased every brace out there. I haven't purchased a brand new one from every single one, but I know we've purchased some of our big competitors, and honestly, we didn't really care what they were doing. I loved, when I raced motorcycles, I loved goggle bags. I loved stuff like that. I find myself, my neck brace doesn't fit in my helmet bag, so I gotta just throw it in my gear bag.
Not something you want to get beat up.
No, and it for me, I felt like it was something that needed its own case. And
well, that's some forethought that I appreciate as a potential buyer of something like this in the future.
And you know, the inside the case, we got some pockets for hardware. You can throw rolls of tear offs in, or you know, deals of tear offs.
Or so short course off road and in dirt track racing, you have to have a special device so you can listen to track officials.
Yeah, Raceiver.
Yeah. So all that stuff, it could go right in here, because a helmet bag is usually just a bag for the helmet.
Yeah, the helmet bag just slips open. There's not any extra pockets or any thing in there.
You got some room for that. Now, you don't have instructions in here, do you?
No. You know, we're in the 21st century. We didn't need to send instructions.
So is that what this little doohickey's for?
Yep. So that card there, you scan it with your phone. It takes you to the webpage on our website that's got an instruction video. Shows you exactly what you need to do to hook up the helmet hardware, how to hook up your helmet,
okay,
or you know, the brace to your helmet. All fairly self-explanatory, but if you need any help, just scan that code and it'll take you to the instruction video.
So in this bag is your hardware and blue Loctite?
Blue Loctite, yep.
Okay.
I don't trust the little, you know, some of this stuff comes with like the dried blue Loctite it's supposed to be activated when you do it. I didn't trust it. We decided to just give you a whole little deal. And if you ever need to take it off, swap helmets, you got another. Just throw that Loctite in with your bag, and
a little dab will do you.
Yeah, you'll be taken care of.
And then this is a thank you from the company.
Yeah.
And you, and is that your partner?
Yeah. Well, this is he's not a owner of the company. He was a guy I went to school with that took a hell of a chance to come work for me.
Okay.
And yeah, took a pay cut to come work with me. Connor's been awesome. You know, if you email or call Mayru right now, chances are, and you need any kind of high-level information, you're going to talk to me or Connor. He handles all our wholesale distribution, our driver support. Connor's an awesome guy. If you talk to him, please be nice to him. He's new to racing, but he's learning so fast.
Okay.
And he has been probably one of the best decisions I've made for Mayru, was bringing a guy like Connor on.
So this thank you letter, all the information, you and Connor's signatures and everything.
Yep.
Okay.
We decided on that. The first batch of races, you know, the early movers and the early adapters are incredibly important for our long-term health.
So
just getting off the ground.
This letter is not going to be in everyone in the future. Are you saying that?
I don't know.
Okay. So you for sure get it now, but later on when it's not a pre-order setup.
I'm not going to guarantee that everybody gets a deal. I know it was a... The big deal is when you start selling thousands of them, you know, it's really hard. I know we signed 250 of them, and that was my hand.
Oh, so these are hand signed?
Yeah. No, those are hand signed. If you don't hand sign them, they don't have they're not embossed.
Oh.
They don't have the divot in them.
No, yeah. I would have thought it was printed, but I can see now it's a little bit different color. Okay.
Yeah. No.
So props to you on that. I would not have thought to sign 250.
Yeah, I you know, sometimes you get like handwritten letters from companies and that look handwritten, and I always feel on them to see if it has them, you know, they're embossed, like if you actually wrote it with pen.
Did you notice as you went along your signature changed?
Yes, and you know, and Connor, you know, I grew up racing and I motorcycles and the race cars, so I've been practicing my signature since I was in like second grade. I was bound and determined somebody was going to want my signature very early on, and it wasn't until I was in my 20s before anybody actually asked. Connor didn't grow up racing. So he started signing his signature. He's only signed it on like official paperwork and stuff like that.
Well, and we're not really from an age anymore where you sign a bunch of checks and stuff.
Well, and so he goes and he's like, "Oh, yours looks good. Mine looks terrible." And he's like, "Okay, it's getting better. It's getting better."
He's developed his signature as
he does. He took a break like halfway through and he's like, "I feel like my signature is getting better."
Okay.
And by the end, he's like, "Okay, those are good." So then he wanted the pages off the top to go in the first set of braces. So they looked good.
All right, and then sticker sheet?
Yeah, you know, everybody likes stickers, it never seems like you have the right size sticker.
Okay.
So we went with slightly different sizes, and you want something to go on a white or black.
You've got some options.
Yeah, you got some options there, and fun little app.
So I personally have not been to Baja to a race, but I've only heard stories and seen it on video. All the kids down there, they want stickers.
Oh.
And the stickers can be, from what I understand, used as currency. Like, if you need something, like, sometimes they want the stickers bad enough for, like, if you need fuel, like, hey, here's some stickers. And you might end up with some fuel or some help.
You know, there's also, you know, you talk about little kids in Mexico about this, or Baja. I'm pretty sure when we were at PRI this year, there were some old guys that would have traded for some stickers too. We went through so many stickers at PRI, it made me feel really good about our logo, because the guys that were next to us, they had stickers out too, and they had the same group of stickers out on their table all week, and you know, they got most of the way picked through by the end of the week. We were having to restock our table like every 2 hours. So we gave out like 2,000 stickers at PRI.
So let's lift it out now.
Yes.
And
that's where the magic happens.
So I am by no means like a connoisseur of any of this. I know enough to make myself sound smart or stupid depending on certain situations.
You know enough to be dangerous.
The weave on the carbon fiber looks consistent and nice. And I only say that because that's what I always hear people talk about with carbon fiber stuff. Like,
yeah, you don't want it to be squished.
You're
looking for even lines.
And sometimes you're going to in certain spots, you know, I get it. But like, especially the flat spots, you don't want to see it all like junky.
Well, these are compression molds. So especially when you have any contours, you're going to have some bit of squish in it. But for the most part on those big, long pieces, you get a nice consistent weave.
So is the shock covered to protect the shock?
So that was actually a request from the IndyCar series. The reason they wanted that cover was tacked as a burst shield. If a shock ever exploded, you know, pulled one apart, had any issues, they wanted it to be covered. Originally, we just had a hoop. And so IndyCar was asking for us to make a plate specifically for IndyCar to act as a burst shield. And we decided, well, if IndyCar wants this is something we should look at anyways. And we just made it a part of the brace. Okay. We made the front piece is permanent installed. The front plate's permanent. And then the back plate pops off. So you can
this
change.
Piece right here. Yep. Okay.
It made it so we can, our tethers are retained and your tethers can't fall out as long as the plate's in. But if you ever need to swap tethers, you just pull the plate off and you can, you can pull it set out. Also, you can pull the plate off to look at the shock, make sure if you ever had any leaks or anything, as with any piece of safety equipment, you need to pay attention. You need to look at it. If you do ever have any kind of oil leak, any kind of issue, we have if you send us a brace, you pay the shipping, and we offer free inspection. Whether you have a leak, you have a big crash, anything like that, if it's the inspection's free. If we have to change anything, swap anything out after a crash, you're just paying parts. We're not charging labor. That service side is not a money maker for us, and we don't want it to be. We actually really want you to send braces back in as frequently as possible.
Well, so, it also gives you information on how they're doing, right?
Yeah, we want a finger on the pulse of what's going on. So I know we've been approached. A bunch of our dealers have asked if they can do recertification for us, and if they can do that. Ultimately, they're looking for it as a little bit of a money
maker. And by recertification, tell everybody what you mean.
So most time for recertification, you'll get a new SFI sticker.
Okay.
With
like harnesses, they've got dates on them, and usually it's new harnesses because it's the webbing that goes bad, and it doesn't really make sense financially to have your seatbelts re-webbed.
Yeah.
Because you might as well just buy a
just
whole
buy
new set
of belts.
Yeah.
On these, you know, it makes sense, especially with ours. We have a lot of fusible links, and we've got a lot of bend, crack, stuff like that in a big impact that you can pull off, bolt a new one on, and you don't have to replace the whole brace.
Okay.
The shock and the collar are the two strongest pieces. Everything else.
Collar right here.
Yeah,
right?
The collar and then the shock.
Shock that's right there.
Yeah.
You barely see the bottom.
The shock mounts, the shock pins, all that stuff at a certain point is designed to bend, because what we don't want is
to
break.
Actually fail
yeah,
and break.
Break.
You want it to yield, not break.
Exactly. But because of that, you know, if you have a big impact, you might have some stuff that's bent up. The nice part is, send it in, we'll swap out what's bent, we'll put a new certification sticker on it, and we'll get it back to you. And, you know, for a couple $100, you have a brand new brace instead of having to spend another $1,200 on a new one. And we're the only company out there that has parts you can replace after a big impact. The rest of them, it cracked or not?
So in this case, and what you're saying is, if everything needs to be replaced, but say the collar, it's the same price?
No, we'll have a parts list for,
okay.
You know, for, you know, a shock pin will be worth, you know, this much.
Okay.
A shock mount is worth.
So
X.
The more you have to replace, the more you have to pay, but you're still not paying full price again, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And the only thing where we would scrap a brace is if you hurt a collar. If you hurt the collar, then that one's dead, and, you know.
If that happens, somebody's in a horrible wreck, this works as it's intended, but it's no longer reusable. Is there a rebuy program or a new purchase program for them, for a customer that they love this, they want this, the rebuild program didn't work, recertification program didn't
yeah.
work. Are they back in at a full price, or do they get a discount on the next one or anything like that?
That's always going to be a case by case
okay.
deal. But ultimately, if you crash hard enough to hurt that brace, especially if you hurt the collar, and it's too far gone for us to replacement parts, then we feel we did our job. We because without it, you're going to be in bad shape.
From what I understand of your test results, that would be quite the impact.
Yeah, I mean, at 70 Gs, you could have at 70 G impact, you could have recrashed them.
And 70 Gs is, so every G is one times your own body weight, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So if you're a 200-pound man, that's 70 times 200, correct?
Correct.
That's a lot of force.
Yes, it is, you know, it, like I said, if you we could have recrashed those braces and recertified those braces. So if you crashed hard enough to break one, then we feel we've done our job.
Okay.
And you know, you should theoretically be happy you were wearing it and be okay buying a new one.
I do not disagree, because I didn't think about the numbers until you said that. Like 70 Gs, like that is a astronomical number. That would be what, 100, if you're a 200-pound man, 140,000 pounds of force, I think, if my math's right.
We're, for the most part, when we're dealing with the deal, we're basing it off an 11-pound head.
Oh, okay.
With helmet.
True.
And
okay, so
deal.
G of that.
Yep.
But still, that's a lot of force on your neck.
Yeah, so we've tested this. We built a fixture at our shop to test at 2,800 pounds. And we've hit this at 2,800 pounds 100 times in a row. And just boom, boom, boom.
Anything fail or bend?
No fail. We bent the upper shock mount and the lower shock, the upper shock pin and the lower shock mount.
But replaceable parts.
Replaceable parts. And nothing failed after that many revolutions. Okay. That was specifically, we have a test we have to do to clear FIA certification, which FIA is currently suspended all new applications for braces until July, or till June. But there was stuff we were just preparing for
FIA. Are they overwhelmed by everybody trying to develop stuff to follow you?
No, they are currently, you know, I wish. They are reviewing their current testing standards and procedures. They have a big meeting on May 31st to go over all those, and then they'll reopen deals. If we had something that would have worked for the same test that they did for Hans or the same test they did for Hybrid, we could have tested with them, because they have a specific test for Hans and a specific test for Hybrid.
But this is not the same neck restraint.
No, it's not
the
same.
This is not the same. You're not using the same, restraint system. Like, you've changed the game, honestly. Because nobody else's moves, right?
Nope.
So you can't test this the same way you do the others, right?
No. I mean, you can.
But
we did with SFI.
But are you going to show what it can really do?
No, SFI has one test for everybody. FIA has a much different procedure, but for the same reason, when they approved the Hybrid, they couldn't do the exact same test as the Hans and show it.
Okay.
So when FIA, the FIA has one standard for Hans.
And FIA is a little bit stricter, right? Or more in depth.
Yeah.
They also cover the entire world, where SFI is mainly United States.
Yeah. And
North America.
They have a set of procedures and testing procedures you have to accomplish. And then they have a committee, so it's not just numbers on a sheet. They can still approve or deny you based off of an opinion, and so you really have to win them over. The good news is, right now, specifically for head and neck restraints, they only have a few board members that are voting board members, and one of those is Dr. Terry Trammell from the Verizon Indy, or I guess NTNT Data IndyCar series.
Whatever the name.
IndyCar series, yeah. He's the lead doctor for their series. And he is a voting member on that board, and we've worked with him very closely throughout the development. So, you know, we feel like we have a leg up, because we already have been working with Trammell so much. So we think we can, once FIA opens up, we think we can get through there fairly quickly. We have several IndyCar drivers and WeatherTech sports cars.
Those
guys want to use it, and they're not allowed to, right?
Because it has to have FIA. SFI didn't work.
Yep.
Because they travel and they race in more than just the United States.
No, it's just it's just each series has specific standards. You know, it's not necessarily as like SFI is just US and FIA is everywhere else, because there's places in Australia, New Zealand that will accept SFI. Okay. And then there's in South America that are based off of SFI. For the most part, FIA is on the world stage, but there is specifically IMSA and IndyCar require FIA certification. Okay. NASCAR is a whole different deal because they require SFI and then NASCAR approval, and NASCAR has their own whole own independent board, who's, you know, unbiased board that reviews it and goes through their own procedures. So we've submitted a brace to NASCAR. We're waiting to submit for FIA. And so that's...
So you've got some stuff in the works, sounds like.
Yeah.
Any future products you might have in the works that you can expand on?
You know, we're looking at all the different hard points that your body touches in the race car. It's not necessarily like suits or any of the soft stuff, but braces, helmets, seats.
Okay.
We haven't necessarily committed to any one product, but we're considering and looking at all of them, all with trying to carry the common idea of energy absorption and suspension systems. What we're doing with the shock, can we go do this with a helmet? Can we do this with seats? If so, awesome. But we don't want to make me-too products. We don't want to just be doing something that, you know, just adding another thing to our deal to pair, and just, you know, I think, you know, Ford has done this to where they were making every different type of car.
And well, you could also have any color you wanted as long as it was black, from what I remember.
Yeah,
from what I hear, when the Model T came out, Henry Ford told everybody, you can have any color you want as long as it's black.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, if you look at the, you know, I think it was like into the late 2000s, Ford had started this whole deal where they were making all these different types of cars, and they had totally... You know, during the crash, everything was sideways, and they had one brilliant CEO come in and said, we're going to scrap most of this. Mm-hmm. We're going to go down, I think it was to 8 models. They went from making, I think, over 100 different models of cars to 8. Same things, you know, Steve Jobs, when he took over Apple, they were making hundreds of different products at Apple, and they took it down to like 4. We're only going to do things we're going to be best at.
You're going to focus on the things that you believe in and that you really want to develop.
If we're not best in class, if we're not the most cutting edge, you know, best technology out there, then we're not going to do it.
I think that's a great segue into closing this out, because you've essentially told what about the future of the company. You're only going to do stuff that you're passionate about, that you're going to develop to the best that you can, and if you have to walk in someone else's footsteps and do it the way they want, you're not going to do it.
No, we're racers. I mean, we're not a big, you know, big company trying to this isn't a marketing campaign. This isn't trying to repackage an old product. This is us as racers coming together and trying to make something that's better than anything else out there. That's what we have to do. That's why we all race. And so this is why we do it. We love it. And we're only going to do things we can try and beat people at.
I really appreciate that.